Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3, and it's Powering Your Property. I'm Howie Lim. Now, from health to economics, 2020 saw the world upended. However, latest data suggests that prime property markets have been largely resilient. A year ago, Knight Frank's Prime Global Cities Index, which tracks the movement in prime prices across 45 cities, was rising at a rate of 1.1% per annum. By the end of September 2020, the rate had climbed to 1.6%. So what's causing this, and will this rise persist into 2021 and beyond? We find out from Victoria Garrett, Head of Residential at Knight Frank Asia Pacific. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Harry, for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
So let's talk about some of the key prime market drivers then this year.
So I'd probably break this down into six segments, which you'll see in our report. So the first is the huge fiscal stimulus that we've seen. So central banks and governments have ploughed support into jobs and housing across the piece. In October, the IMF estimated these fiscal stimulus packages totaled about $12 trillion, sorry, US dollars. And obviously the final amount is expected to be much higher. So from furlough schemes to mortgage holidays, homeowners have been protected, and there has not been a flood of properties to the market, and that has cushioned prices. The second point I would say is that the pandemic fueled pent-up demand. So in the US, UK and Canada, Australia and parts of Asia, when markets reopened, we saw a release of pent-up demand and a widespread revaluation of lifestyles and, of course, more flexible working patterns. I think we've obviously had the biggest work from home experiment we ever expected to go through. And that's really made people evaluate where they want to live and what they need from their homes on a day-to-day basis. And in fact, in response to this, we did a global buyer survey in the summer, which took the pulse of buyers' attitudes during the pandemic. And it found that 25% of buyers said they were more likely to move as a result. The third is cheap finance. So central banks around the world have cut policy rates by 2% on average this year, so reducing the cost of mortgage borrowing, therefore fueling purchasing. And Americans can take out a 30-year fixed rate mortgage, an annual interest rate of just 2.9%. And in perspective, that's down from 3.7% at the beginning of the year. We've then got supply shortages to some markets, particularly Singapore and Sydney. At the prime end of the market, are seeing a lack of supply, and the pandemic will only heighten this given construction rates have stalled. So we're going to only have about 1,150 residential units forecast to be built in 2021 in Sydney, and that's down from just over 9,000 in 2018. And then there's buying opportunities, which I know is always at the top of people's minds they're looking to invest. So if you look at London, New York, we've seen 5 and 3 years respectively of declining prices in those locations. That means that areas such as Chelsea and London, prime prices are down as much as 25% since late 2014. So there's a growing sense these markets are coming to the end of their property cycles and the rate of decline is slowing, and therefore there is a great opportunity to invest there. Sixth point, last but not least, is the tax changes. So both UK and Mumbai introduced stamp duty holidays to boost the housing market, and this resulted in strong activity in both markets.
So you wouldn't exactly say that nothing's changed. A lot of things have changed in order to drive these key prime markets, right?
A lot has changed. I mean, you look
because
at all those
there's
different
always
drivers.
This talk when it comes to talking to property analysts that it's very resilient, but things changed. So hence, other things changed as well.
I mean, I would say actually it sort of solidifies that resilience even further, because actually a lot of people would say that they would have expected prices to have dropped dramatically, that we would have seen the bottom fall out of markets. It just hasn't been the case. And I think we've seen more people looking at property as a diversification of safe haven asset through the pandemic. But I also think it's made people really consider where they live day to day. There are interesting drivers that are helping support that demand, but I think it also underpins property as an asset class.
What else of import should we note from the report, Victoria?
So a couple of key takeaways I think are good to highlight, which is 45% of cities reported seeing a return of expats from abroad, including Singapore, London, New York, Cape Town, Sydney and Auckland. And I touched on that global buyer survey before. We saw this playing out, you know, people, again, thinking about where they want to live, if they're living away from home as an expat, being 7, 12, 24 hours away, historically was fine. You would jump on a plane, but obviously that's all changed through the pandemic. So we've definitely seen that return of expats. Also, 36% of cities reported seeing a shift of demand to suburban markets. Again, people looking for more space, thinking if they're going to go through another lockdown, as some cities have gone through multiple iterations, that they want access to private outside space and they want to have an area where they can work from home. And that well-being element and that quality of life has really played into that. But interesting, it's more into suburban markets. People can still get access back into the city. And there's been a lot of questions about the future of the office space. And I think from where I sit, it's more going to be a hybrid going forward. And then also by Q3 2020, 45% of cities reported that prime sales were already back to pre-pandemic levels. And these included Geneva, London, LA, Miami, Sydney, and Singapore.
So it sounds like for particular markets, say, for example, Singapore, where space is limited and space is pricey, that might have some impact, won't it?
I think Singapore is going to benefit from a number of different drivers. It will impact. We've also seen a real uptick in the take-up of new launches recently that have launched in Singapore. I touched before on that supply element in the prime market. There is that scarcity element, and there's a lack of supply coming on. But we're also seeing Singapore growing as that regional hub. And we're seeing a lot of business and wealth gravitate to Singapore for a number of reasons. The government have been great at stimulating startups and businesses to come here. So there are a lot of drivers supporting that.
So we're already seeing some regions hitting pre-pandemic levels. By the end of 2020, do you think that'll go up more compared to 2019?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because the impact of the pandemic has been driven by several things. So if you look at travel restrictions, I'm really interested to see what happens once those borders open. We talked about that pent-up demand before from when we had lockdowns in different circuit breakers in different locations that played out. There's obviously a lot of pent-up demand for people that can't travel. Having said that, it's been really interesting. I've been in the property market for many years, and I've worked in the UK, Middle East, and now Asia, is that the transition in terms of virtual viewings has been adopted very quickly. That's not to say that everyone is comfortable to transact virtually, but we have done significant business virtually. There is still a number of people who have used that tool to shortlist properties. So it'll be interesting to see when people can travel more freely. And when will that be? We've obviously got the vaccines that are playing out at the moment, which is great to see. But I think that it's been predicted that we won't see normal travel as we saw back in 2019 till possibly 2023. But I hope with borders opening more freely at some point next year, I hope that we're also going to see that pent-up demand play out. We have clients from all over the globe who are waiting to physically view and to then make a decision.
Victoria Garrett, Head of Residential at Knight Frank Asia Pacific. Victoria, so what do you reckon? The pandemic will still have an impact on demand, supply, sales volumes in 2021?
So if you look at 2021, we expect 18 of the 22 cities we reference to see demand strengthen, with Mumbai and Dubai expecting to see the strongest increases. I mean, supply, we touched on before, that's emerging as the key issue for prime markets. Only 7 expected to see supply increase in 2021. And that's going to act as a further support for prices long term. And then of the 19 of the 22 cities that are forecast to see prime sales increase, there's further evidence of recovery in other prime markets in 2021. So I think it's going to be interesting to see the different drivers. You know, Shanghai is already back to pre-pandemic levels. That's expected to see one of the strongest price growths. And then Cape Town as well. But Cape Town is recovering from a very low base, having slipped about 10% in the last few years. So there are different drivers there. Next, I would say in terms of the growth, we're looking at London and Lisbon. They're looking at a level pegging of a 4% annual growth in 2021. Obviously, London's had the ongoing Brexit questions and issues, which hopefully will be resolved in January. We also saw a Conservative government come in, which brought stability into the property market last year. And we've got the stamp duty holiday that the UK put into place, which will last into Q1. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then in Lisbon, it's the new the golden visa piece and the new airport that's opening up, which we're expected to see it drive prices. And then looking at the two cities that we expect to see price declines, Buenos Aires and Dubai. But the rate of decline in Dubai has moderated in recent years. And the postponed expo, which was meant to happen this year, will take place from October 2021 to March 2022. So there are interesting factors. Not only we've talked about the sort of stimulus we've seen, but also factors individually in each market in terms of infrastructure that will play out and events that will drive people into those markets.
And 2021 and beyond, you reckon, what's your forecast? Trends that might influence the prime property market as well?
So I think this is a really interesting thing to look at. And in our report, we touch on 8 trends that we see having an impact. One being ESG. You know, green ethical investing is at the top of the agenda for all businesses. Also with Biden as a president, so purpose-led investment up the global agenda. The blended city, and we touched on this before, the work from home experiment, you know, the 5-day commute for some is a distant memory. And will it come back? I don't think it fully will. I don't think that it will. It strikes the end of the office. I think that's hugely important. I think it's going to be a hybrid there. And it's about lifestyles, isn't it? You know, and how that's going to drive in terms of retail and amenities in the suburbs as well, with more people moving out. access to open space and actually access to boat holds. So we saw an uptick in interest in the sun and sort of ski resorts over the summer, with people thinking about future holidays and buying that boat hold. But what we're seeing is probably people wanting something that's actually reachable were they to go into lockdown again. So we're looking at locations for second homes sort of set to change, and a sort of blend between that primary and secondary residence, which is quite interesting. In fact, I was speaking to our team in Auckland, the Baileys and Knight Frank business there, and they actually said that second homes are a scarcity now across New Zealand. There's been a huge uptick in New Zealanders buying their second homes in New Zealand, but there's basically no stock left available. The other is digital nomads. So I think what was interesting when we first went into the pandemic was people thought, God, this is going to totally change the way that we live and work. We're not going to be in the office anymore. We're going to be working remotely. I don't see it, as I said before, playing out that way. But I think we have realized there is that degree of flexibility. And we saw countries like Barbados, the Bahamas and Dubai's policymakers acknowledging that the global workforce has gone more mobile. And they obviously introduced short-term visas in an effort to boost their pandemic hit economies. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So I think the private rental sector is an interesting sector that will benefit from that. I think there's a part of the workforce that will want that. There is a part there when you've got family, kids, that you want that stability. I think it'll just introduce people to living in different locations, but perhaps the core of their business is based somewhere else. And that comes back to lifestyle and quality of life and the environment you're in. And then alternative sectors, I mean, data centers are huge. I mean, Knight Frank, we're investing hugely in our expertise in data centers. So from data centers to retirement homes to healthcare. And I touched on it before, the private rented sector. You know, investors are widening their net, given the opportunities in the medium to long term in those alternative sectors. And then resort markets, that comes back to what we just touched on about the sort of nomad workplace and resort markets, because obviously they were overshadowed by escalating prices in prime cities since the last financial crisis. But be they, you know, a ski resort or so from Aspen to Cairns, we're seeing demand strengthen, which is really interesting. And that comes again into that health and well-being piece. But then on the flip side, I talked before about, you know, lending and stimulus that have come from governments into the markets, but and cheap finance. But actually on the flip side of that, and we're seeing this at the moment in the UK because they put in this stamp duty holiday, you know, the lenders are being swamped. So actually turning around a mortgage is taking a lot longer than before, not only because of the demand, but also actually for people working from home and systems working slightly differently than normal. So we are seeing more countries expected to join the negative rate club in 2021. But I think lending will remain cheap. I think that lenders are going to be more cautious with the lending they offer and the loan to value ratios. So for sort of more highly leveraged clients, you're going to have to have a higher loan to value ratio to be able to get the lendings. And then tax. You know, we've seen multiple tax changes. And I guess the question is that will governments look to raise property tax in this post-pandemic world to replenish lost revenue, or will it drive towards a more foreign buyer tax? So that'll be interesting to see then how that translates into who wants to invest where. But lots, again, lots of different factors and thoughts to take into account now.
Victoria, thanks for helping us out today.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
Victoria Garrett, Head of Residential at Knight Frank Asia Pacific. This is Powering Your Property on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.